This is Audible.
Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Arrow's Flight by Mercedes Lackey. Narrated by Krista Lewis. Prologue. Long ago. So long ago that the details of the conflict are lost and only the merest legends remain. The world of Velgarth was racked by sorcerous wars. The population was decimated. The land quickly turned to wilderness and was given over to the forest and the magically engendered creatures that had been used to fight those wars, while the people who remained fled to the eastern coastline, there to resume their shattered lives. Humans are resilient creatures, however, and it was not over long before the population once again was on the increase, and folk began to move westward again, building new kingdoms out of the wilderness. One such kingdom was Valdemar. Founded by the once barren Valdemar and those of his people who had chosen exile with him rather than facing the wrath of a selfish and cruel monarch, it lay on the very western and northernmost edge of the civilized world. In part due to the nature of its founders, the monarchs of Valdemar welcomed fugitives and fellow exiles, and the customs and habits of its people had over the years become a polyglot patchwork. In point of fact, the one rule by which the monarchs of Valdemar governed their people was, there is no one true way. Governing such an ill-assorted lot of subjects might have been impossible, had it not been for the heralds of Valdemar. The heralds served many functions. They were administrative overseers, dispensers of justice, information gatherers, even temporary military advisers, answerable only to the monarch and their own circle of peers. Such a system might have seemed ripe for abuse. It would have been, but for the companions. To the unknowing eye, a companion would seem little more than an extraordinarily graceful white horse. They were far more than that. Sent by some unknown power or powers at the pleading of King Valdemar himself, it was the companions who chose new heralds, forging between themselves and their chosen a mind-to-mind bond that only death could sever. While no one knew precisely how intelligent they were, it was generally agreed that their capabilities were at least as high as those of their human partners. Companions could, and did, choose irrespective of age and sex, although they tended to choose youngsters just entering adolescence, and more boys were chosen than girls. The one commonality among the chosen, other than a specific personality type, patient, unselfish, responsible, and capable of heroic devotion to duty, was at least a trace of psychic ability. Contact with a companion and continued development of the bond enhanced whatever latent paranormal capabilities lay within the chosen. With time, as these gifts became better understood, ways were developed to train and use them to the fullest extent to which the individual was capable. Gradually, the gifts displaced in importance whatever knowledge of true magic was left in Valdemar, until there was no record of how such magic had ever been learned or used. So the governing of Valdemar evolved. The monarch, advised by his council, made the laws. The heralds dispensed the laws and saw that they were observed. The heralds themselves were nearly incapable of becoming corrupted or potential abusers of their temporal power. The chosen were by nature remarkably self-sacrificing. Their training only reinforced this. They had to be. There was a better than even chance that a herald would die in the line of duty. But they were human for all of that, mostly young, mostly living on the edge of danger. So it was inevitable that outside of their duty they tended to be a bit hedonistic and anything but chaste. And only seldom did a herald form a tie beyond that of brotherhood and the pleasures of the moment. Perhaps because the bond of brotherhood was so very strong, and because the herald-companion bond left little room for any other permanent ties. For the most part, Few of the common or noble folk held this against them, knowing that no matter how wanton a herald might be on leave, the moment he donned his snowy uniform, he was another creature altogether. For a herald in whites was a herald on duty, and a herald on duty had no time for anything outside of that duty, least of all the frivolity of his own pleasures. Still, there were those who held other opinions, some of them in high places. Laws laid down by the first king decreed that the monarch himself must also be a herald. Thus it was ensured that the ruler Valdemar could never be the kind of tyrant who had caused the founders to flee their own homes. Second in importance to the monarch was the herald known as the king's or queen's own. Chosen by a special companion, one that never seemed to age, though it was possible to kill him, and was always a stallion, the queen's own held the special position of confidant and most trusted friend and adviser to the ruler. Thus the monarchs of Valdemar were assured that they would always have at least one person about them who could be trusted and counted on at all times. This tended to make for stable and confident rulers, and thus a stable and dependable government. For generations, it seemed that King Valdemar had planned his government perfectly. But the best-laid plans are still capable of being circumvented by accident or chance. In the reign of King Sendar, the kingdom of Carsi, that bordered Valdemar to the southeast, hired a nomadic nation of mercenaries to attack Valdemar. In the ensuing war, Sendar was killed, and his daughter, Selene, assumed the throne, herself having only recently completed her herald's training. The queen's own, an aged herald called Talamir, was frequently confused and embarrassed at having to advise a young, headstrong, and attractive female. As a result, Selene made an ill-advised marriage, one that nearly cost her both her throne and her life. The issue of that marriage, the heir presumptive, was a female child whom Selene called Elspeth. Elspeth came under the influence of the nurse Selene's husband had brought from his own land, and became an intractable, spoiled brat. It became obvious that if things went on as they were tending, the girl would never be chosen, and thus could never inherit. This would leave Selene with two choices: marry again, with the attendant risks, and attempt to produce another, more suitable heir, or declare someone already chosen and with the proper bloodline to be heir. Or, somehow, salvage the heir presumptive. Talamir had a plan, one that it seemed had a good chance of success, which involved sending the child into fosterage in a remote province, away from the influence of the nurse and court, with those who could be counted upon to take no nonsense from her. Then Talamir was murdered, throwing the situation into confusion again. His companion, Roland, chose a new queen's own, but instead of picking an adult or someone already a full herald, chose an adolescent girl named Talia. Talia was of Holderkin, a puritanical border group which did its best to discourage knowledge of outsiders. Talia had no idea what it meant to have a herald's companion accost her, and then, apparently, carry her off. Among her people, females held very subordinate positions, and nonconformity was punished immediately and harshly. And since Talia herself was ill-suited to a subordinate role, she was constantly being told that everything she said or did was wrong at best and evil at worst. She was ill-prepared for the new world of the heralds and their collegium. The one thing she did have experience in was the handling and schooling of children, for she had been the teacher to her holding's younger members from the time she was 9. But she managed to find a true home among the heralds and to civilize the brat. Now the year and a half of field duty awaited her, and a trial she never dreamed of having to pass. Chapter 1. Thwack! The flat of Albrecht's practice blade cracked against Talia's ill-guarded side. She hadn't seen the blow coming, she truly hadn't. That had hurt, and she would lay money on having a bruise, despite the padded jerkin that had absorbed most of the blow. The practice blades may have only been wood, but Albrecht tended to wield them all the harder for that. "Fah!" he spat in disgust, and came at her again before she had recovered from the last blow. This time he connected with her knife arm right at the elbow. She yelped, the arm went numb, and she lost her blade entirely. The hawk-like eyes glared at her with no trace of pity, and the scar-seamed face was a demonic mask as he passed judgment on her performance. He was at least in his mid-40s, if not older, but he hadn't lost a fraction of his edge or agility in the 5 years Talia had known him. She was panting with exertion. He might as well have been taking a leisurely stroll. His well-worn, dark leathers. He was the only working herald in Talia's experience who never wore whites. Showed not so much as a tiny sweat stain. The afternoon sun pouring down on all of them had made him look as thin and insubstantial as a shadow, and he had been just as hard to catch.
"A pity it is that Scaff is not here to see you. Die of laughter, he surely would," he growled. 18 year, one would think you 8, slow, clumsy, and stupid. Pah! Had I been a real assassin,
I would have died of fright before you touched me.
Now it is jokes. This is a battle practice, not a comedy. If I wish amusement, I shall find a jester. Once again, and correctly this time.
When she was ready to drop with exhaustion, he turned his attention to Elspeth. Now that both of them deserved special tutelage, he had changed the hour of their lessons to one shared by no one else, so that he could give his full devotion to the Queen's Own and heir presumptive. Rather than being held on the training grounds outside, the two had their drills in the saal. This was a barn-like building with a sanded wooden floor, lined with mirrors, with high, clear-story windows to admit the maximum amount of light. Lessons were always held here during inclement weather, but it was too small for mass practices and classes for the combined heraldic, bardic, healers' collegium students. Only those privileged to receive private lessons with Albrecht took those lessons habitually in the saal. Now that his attention was off her, Talia found her thoughts drifting back to her surprise of this afternoon. Talia tugged and wriggled impatiently until she had succeeded in getting the supple, soft white leather tunic over her head. Pulling it into place over the white rame shirt and leather breeches, she finally turned to admire the effect in the polished metal mirror in front of her.
"Heavens!" she laughed, not a little surprised. "Why don't the Greys ever look like this?"
"Because," a harsh voice drawled from the next room, "you youngsters would have your minds on anything but your studies if they did."
Talia laughed, turned back to the mirror, and preened. Today was the anniversary of her first class at Herald's Collegium, a fact that she'd forgotten until Karen and Cheryl, senior heralds both and instructors at the Collegium, as well as Talia's longtime friends, arrived at her room with their arms full of white uniforms and wearing broad grins. For the heraldic circle had considered, for less than 5 minutes all told, had voted, and had passed Talia into full herald status with the rest of her yearmates. No surprise to anyone in the collegium, though by tradition the trainees were not to know when they were to be evaluated until the evaluation had already been made and they had passed. Karen and Cheryl had claimed the right to give her the good news. They didn't even give her a chance to think, either. Just appeared at her door, swept her up on either side, and herded her down the long, dark, wood-paneled hall of the collegium dormitory, down the stairs to the first floor, and out the double doors at the end. From there they had taken her off to the seneschal's office to claim her new quarters. Now she stood in the bedroom of the suite she'd chosen, marveling at her reflection.
"I look like a real grown-up for a change."
"That is the general idea,"
Cheryl laughed richly. She cocked her head to one side, regarding the tiny, slender figure in the mirror. Her unruly red-brown curls were as tousled as ever,
but somehow gave an impression now of being tumbled the way they were on purpose. The huge, deep brown eyes that had been utterly guileless seemed somehow wiser. The heart-shaped face no longer so childlike. And all that change wrought by the magic of a new uniform.
Talia, your head is going to swell like a sponge toad in rainy season if you're not careful.
Karen interrupted her train of thought a second time. By craning her neck to peer around the doorframe, Talia could see the riding instructor grinning sardonically from where she was sprawled on the wooden-backed, red-cushioned couch in the other room.
"Don't you know what the Book of the Wand says?"
Cheryl added piously over her mate's shoulder.
"Great pride shall earn equal humiliation."
Talia left her bedroom to join them. They were lounging comfortably in her sparsely furnished outer room, sharing the lone couch.
"I suppose you're both going to claim that you never spent so much as a minute in front of the mirror when you first got your whites,"
Talia taunted, strolling toward them with her hands clasped behind her back.
"Who, me?"
Cheryl replied in artificial innocence, lifting an airy hand and batting thick black lashes over wide hazel eyes.
"And feed my vanity? Well, maybe a little."
"I happen to know for a fact that you spent half the day there. I'm told you were trying every hairstyle you could twist that black mane of yours into, seeing which one went best with the new outfits,"
Karen countered dryly, running her fingers through her own close-cropped, graying brown hair. Cheryl just grinned and crossed her legs elegantly, leaning back into the cushions.
"Since I can't claim equal knowledge of what you did on that august occasion, that's hardly a fair blow."
"Oh, I did my share of mirror-gazing,"
Karen admitted with mock reluctance.
"When you're as scrawny as a sapling and flat as a boy, it's rather astonishing to see yourself in something that actually flatters you. I swear I don't know how they do it. It's the same pattern for everybody, and not that dissimilar from the student grays."
"But Lord, the difference,"
Sherry concluded for her.
"I don't know anybody who doesn't look fantastic in their whites. Even Dirk manages to look presentable. Rumpled, but presentable." "Well, what do you think of me?"
Talia asked, turning on her toes in front of them and grinning impishly into Karen's eyes.
"What do I think? That you look fabulous, you young demon. Keep fishing for compliments, though, and I'll likely dump you in the horse trough. Have they told you anything about your internship?"
Talia shook her head and clasped her hands behind her again.
"No. All they said was that the herald they want to pair me with is in the field, and they won't tell me who it is." "That's pretty much to be expected. They don't want you to have time to think of things to impress him with,"
Cheryl replied. Suddenly her eyes sparkled with mischief.
"Oh, but I can think of one prospect that would give Nerissa a litter of kittens."
"Who?" Talia asked, head to one side.
"Chris and Dirk are due back in the next few weeks, and Dirk got the last greenie, as you should know, since it was Skiff. So it's Chris's turn next. Nessa would die." "Sherry, it's only my internship assignment. A year and a half sector riding, most of it spent alone together, and you say it's only an assignment? Talia, you must have ice water for blood. Do you have any notion of the number of hours Nessa, and half the females of the circle for that matter, spend on their knees, praying for an assignment like that? Are you sure you don't have leanings our way?"
Talia chuckled and wrinkled her nose at them.
"Quite sure, darlings. Just what is Chris's attraction for Nessa anyway? She's got most of the males of the circle panting at her heels as it is."
"The lure of the unattainable, or so I would surmise," Karen supplied,
lids half closed lazily, with only a glint of brown iris showing.
"He hasn't taken a vow of chastity, but he's so circumspect about his dalliances. You'd never know it. It drives Nessa wild, and the harder she chases, the faster he runs. She's as caught up now by the chase as by the face."
"Well,
She can chase him all she wants. I am not at all impressed by Chris's handsome face, Talia replied firmly.
Or the gorgeous body, interjected Cheryl. Or the gorgeous body. Nessa can have all the gorgeous bodies in the circle for all I care. Holderkin men are handsome specimens, and I can do without them. My father could have given Chris stiff competition in his younger days, and I've told you what kind of a petty tyrant he was. And my late but not lamented brother Eustace was actually handsomer, if you favour blondes, and he was the foulest person I've ever known. I'd rather have a good heart and plain packaging.
Yes, but Chris is a herald, Cheryl pointed out,
tapping one long finger on her knee for emphasis.
That guarantees the good heart without having to settle for a homely exterior. No handsome, smiling bastards in our ranks. Sherry, this is all sheer speculation. Until I find out who I'm interning with, I refuse to worry about the subject, Talia replied firmly. You are no fun at all.
I never said I was.
Dirk's interning that scalawag Skiff, Karen said thoughtfully. You and Skiff were very thick there for a while. In fact, as I recall, you and he had a rumour or two floating about your heads. Is that why you aren't interested in Dirk's partner?
Maybe,
Talia smiled enigmatically. The fact that their romance had been entirely without any result was Skiff's secret, and hers. The streak of ill luck and accident that had plagued their meetings had not had any effect on their friendship, except that they had never managed to be more than just that, friends. Oddly enough, though, except for a brief period of anxiety when word had come that Skiff had been hurt during his first 3 months in the field, Talia had thought less of Skiff and more of his counselor. To her own amazement, and for no reason, logical or fanciful that she could think of, when her thoughts strayed in the direction of the former thief and his internship assignment, it was in Dirk's direction that they tended to wander. This was annoying. She'd met the man all of 3 times in her life and had never been in his company for more than an hour or two at most. Yet that homely face and those wonderful blue eyes kept lingering stubbornly in her thoughts. It did not make sense. She shook her head to free it of those fanciful images. She had little enough time and had none to spare in daydreams.
Well, this little wardrobe change of yours ought to surprise little Elspeth, Cheryl said, changing the subject.
Oh, Lady Bright, Talia sat down with a thump on one of her cushions, joy extinguished. It almost seemed to her at that moment that the bright sun rays pouring through her windows had dimmed.
Poor Elspeth.
Something up? Karen asked, one eyebrow rising.
Just the usual.
What's usual? You know I don't get around the court.
Intrigue, rising beyond gossip. She's almost 14 and still not chosen. There's muttering in the court that she's still the brat under the skin, and she'll never be chosen. In council meetings, one or more of the councillors usually trying to pressure Selene into naming an heir, pro tem as they put it.
Who?
Cheryl asked in alarm, sitting straight up.
Who's stirring up the water?
You know I can't tell you that. Anyway, it isn't just those particular councillors, it's more than half of the court. Elspeth doesn't say much, but it's got her very depressed, poor baby. Their timing couldn't be worse. She's already moody enough with the normal adolescent woes, and this has got her in near tears on a regular basis. When I'm not getting my shoulders soggy, I keep finding her at Companion's Field whenever she's free, sort of lurking.
Hoping any minute to be chosen. Gods, no wonder she's wearing a long face whenever I see her. What's Roland got to say about this?
Be damned if I know.
Talia gifted Karen with a look of exasperation.
You know he doesn't mind speak me in words.
Sorry, Karen winced. I keep forgetting.
He's worried, but it could be as much over the machinations and power manoeuvrings at court as anything else. The current candidates are Jerry, Keemock, and your oh-so-lovely Cress.
Wonderful people, in and of themselves, Karen observed. But with some not-so-wonderful relatives lurking in the family trees, One would think Chris's uncle Lord Orthalin would have his hands full enough as chief counsellor without wanting to be the heir's uncle. That man will never have enough power to satisfy him, Talia snapped bitterly.
Karen raised an eyebrow at the outburst and continued.
Kemok's horde of lazy cousins would swarm the court looking for sinecures, and Kemok's such a soft touch he'd try to manage it. And Jerry, Lady Bright, her mother.
We'd have a battle royal every day between Jerry and Lady Indra over how Jerry's council votes should go. I wish her husband would lock her away or buy a gag for her.
Amen. Pity none of them come without baggage. Not my idea of a fun situation. And poor Catling caught in the middle.
Talia sighed in agreement.
Speaking of no fun, I'd better scramble. Albrecht informed me in no uncertain terms that my new status does not exempt me from his special lessons. I have the sinking feeling that he intends to slap my inflated pride down to pre-student levels and probably with the flat of his blade.
Can I watch? Karen asked wickedly.
Why not? Elspeth's always there, and there's nothing like being worse at something than a 13-year-old girl to really deflate your opinions of yourself. Well, that ought to reinflate her self-esteem a bit. Ah, me. It's a pity to have to get these lovely new clothes all over dirt and sweat.
As they descended the cool darkness of the spiraling staircase, Karen and Cheryl in the lead with their arms casually linked, Talia reflected that bringing them together was probably the best thing she'd ever done. The bond between them was easily as strong as the one Karen had shared with Ilsa. And had Ilsa lived, they might very well have formed one of the relatively rare permanent threesomes. There was no doubt that they were very good for each other. Poor Ilsa. Talia's chosen living quarters were at the very top of her tower at the end of the Herald's Wing. The suites in the four towers were seldom used, probably because they were more than a bit inconvenient. The walk up and down the darkened stone staircase was a long one, but she felt that the view and the privacy were worth it. But the trudge was likely to bring complaints from Talia's friends, and Karen voiced the first of many.
"I'll tell you one thing, my fine young herald," Karen grumbled a little when they finally reached the ground floor. "Visiting with you on a regular basis is going to keep your friends in shape. Why you chose to roost with the birds is beyond me."
"Do you truly want to know why I chose that particular suite?" Talia asked with a grin.
"Say on.
Pray remember, if you will, what my gift is. I'm an empath, not a mind speaker. Either of you remember who my neighbor was?" "Destria, wasn't it?"
Cheryl replied after thought.
"Turned out to be a good field herald, despite her,
randiness,"
Karen supplied with a hint of a grin.
"That girl, anything in greys or whites, so long as it was male. Heavens, when did she ever have time to study?"
"Then you both know about her habit of entertaining with great frequency and, enthusiasm.
What I couldn't shield, I could most certainly hear. Between her nocturnal activities and Roland's, I got a quite thorough education, let me assure you. That's when I swore my privacy was worth any inconvenience. I don't want to eavesdrop on anyone else's fun ever again, and I certainly don't want anyone eavesdropping on mine."
"Talia, I don't believe a word of it," Cheryl giggled. "What could you possibly have to fear from eavesdroppers? You're practically a temple virgin compared with the rest of us.
You ought to believe it, since it's all true. Well, here's where we part company. Wish me luck. I'm going to need it."
Pity that they hadn't wished her luck. She might have gotten a few less bruises. Talia fanned herself with a towel while she paced back and forth to keep from stiffening up, and watched Elspeth with unforced enjoyment. The girl was a pleasure to observe, moving through the sparring bout with the grace and agility of a dancer, and making it all seem effortless and easy. She was much better even than Jerry had been at her age, but then she had had the benefits of 4 years of Albrecht's remorseless training. Jerry had only had the finest arms tutors money could obtain. No amount of money could buy Albrecht's expertise. She ran through the assigned exercises with careless grace, Then, at the end of a bout, she unexpectedly executed one of the spin and tumbling rolls that Albrecht had been trying to train into Talia, a move that was not one Albrecht had been teaching her, and she scored a kill on him. He stared at her in startled amazement for a long moment, as both Talia and Elspeth waited breathlessly for the roar of disapproval they were certain would come.
"Good,"
he said at last, as Elspeth's jaw dropped in surprise.
"Very good."
Then, lest she dare to grow careless because of the compliment,
"But next time, must be better."
Despite this unexpected kudos, Talia found when she brought Elspeth a damp towel at the conclusion of the lesson that the girl was subdued and depressed. "What's wrong, Catling?" she asked, seeing how like her mother Elspeth was, despite the brown hair and eyes, rather than Selene's blonde and blue. At this moment, the shadow on her face matched the one the queen wore when troubled. She knew the answer already, but it would do the girl good to talk it out one more time.
"I can't do anything right," Elspeth replied unhappily. "I'll never be as good as you, no matter how hard I try. You can't be serious. No, really, look at you. You spent half your life on a backwoods dirt farm. Now you can't be told from heralds that were high-born. You got good marks in your classes. I'm abysmal in all of mine, and I can't even manage to be chosen. I suspect it's the lass that's eaten at you the most."
Elspeth nodded, the corners of her mouth drooping.
"Catling, we're two different people with wildly different abilities and interests. In the 5 years I've been here, I've never once managed to earn a good from Albrecht, much less a very good. I'm still so stiff when I dance that they say it's like dancing with a broom. Oh, huzzah, I'm a marvel of coordination. I can kill anything on two legs. That's a terrific qualification for being heir."
"Catling, you've got the qualifications. Look, if I live to be 200, I will never understand politics. Think back a minute. At the last council meeting, I could sense that Lord Caradoc was irritated, but you were the one who not only knew why and by whom, but managed to placate the old buzzard before he could start an incident. And your teachers assure me that though you may not be the best in your classes, you aren't the worst by any stretch of the imagination. As for being chosen, Catling, 13 is only the average age for that. Think of Jadis. He was 16 and had been at Bardic for 3 years, or Terran, for lady's sake, a man grown and with 2 children. Look, it's probably only that your companion just hasn't been old enough, and you know very well that they don't choose until they're 10 or better.
Elspeth's mood seemed to be lightening a bit.
"Come on, love, cheer up. And we'll go see Roland. If riding him will bring some sun to your day, I'm sure he'll let you."
Elspeth's long face brightened considerably. She loved riding as much as dancing and sword work. It wasn't often that a companion would consent to bear anyone but his chosen. Roland had done so for Elspeth in the past, and she obviously counted those moments among the finest in her life. It wasn't the same as having her own companion, but it was at least a little like it. Together they left the training cell and headed for the wooded enclosure that was home to the companions at the Collegium, partnered, unpartnered, and foals, and that also held the grove, that place where the companions had first appeared hundreds of years ago. And although she took pains not to show it, Talia was profoundly worried. This situation with Elspeth's status hanging fire could not be maintained for much longer. The strain was telling on the queen, the girl, and the heraldic circle. But Talia had no more notion of how to solve the problem than anyone else. Talia woke with a start, momentarily confused by the strange feel and sounds of the room in which she found herself. She couldn't see a blessed thing, and over her head was a rattling. Then she remembered where she was, and that the rattling was the shutter of the window just over the head of her bed. She'd latched it open, and it was rattling in the high wind that must have begun some time during the night. She turned over and levered herself into a kneeling position on her pillow, peering out into the darkness. She still couldn't see much, dark humps of foliage against barely lighter grass.
The moon was less than half full. All the buildings were dark, and clouds racing along in the wind obscured the stars and the moonlight. The wind smelled of dawn, though, and sunrise couldn't be far off. Talia shivered in the chill, as wind whipped at her. She was about to crawl back under her warm blankets when she saw something below her. A person. A small person, hardly more than a dim figure moving beyond the fence of Companion's Field, visible only because it was wearing something light-colored. And she knew with sudden surety that the one below was Elspeth. She slid out of bed, wincing at the cold wood under her feet, and grabbed clothing by feel, not waiting to stop to light a candle. Confused thoughts tumbled one over the other. Was the girl sleepwalking? Was she ill? But when she reached unthinkingly and tentatively with her gift, she encountered neither the feel of a sleeping mind nor a disturbed one, only a deep and urgent sense of purpose. She should, she realized, in some dim, far-off corner of her mind, be alarmed. But as soon as she had touched Elspeth with her empathic gift, that sense of calm purpose had infected her as well, and she could no more have disobeyed its promptings than have launched into flight from her tower window. In a dreamlike state, she half stumbled out into the middle room, fumbled her way to the door, and cautiously felt her way down the spiraling staircase, with one hand on the cold smoothness of the metal railing and the other on the rough stone of the wall beside her. She was shivering so hard her teeth rattled, and the thick darkness in the stairwell was slightly unnerving. There was light at the foot of it, though, from a lamp set up on the wall. The dim yellow light filled the entranceway, and the wood-paneled corridor beyond was lighted well enough by farther wall-hung lamps that Talia felt safe in running down the stone-floored passageways to the first door to the outside she could find. The wind hit her with a shock. It was a physical blow so hard that she gasped. It nearly wrenched the door out of her hands, and she had to struggle for a moment she had not wanted to spare to get it closed behind her. She realized that she had gotten only a hint of its force from her window. Her room was sheltered from the worst of it by the bulk of the palace itself. She found herself at the exterior bend of the L-shaped herald's wing. Just beyond her bulked the companion's stables. Elspeth was nowhere in sight. More certain of her ground now than she had been in the unfamiliar wing of the palace, Talia would have run if she could, but the wind made that impossible. It plastered her clothing to her body and drove unidentifiable debris at her with the velocity of crossbow bolts. She couldn't hear anything now with it howling in her ears. She knew no one would hear her calling. Now she became vaguely alarmed. With the wind this strong and in the dark, it would be so easy for Elspeth to misstep and find herself in the river. She mind-called Roland for help and could not reach him. Or rather, she could reach him, but he was paying no attention to her whatsoever. His whole being was focused on what it was she could not say, but it demanded all his concentration, for he was absorbed in it with such intensity that he was shutting everything and everyone else out. It was up to her, then. She fought her way around the stables toward the bridge that led across the river to the main portion of Companion's Field. It was with incredible relief that she spotted the vague blur of Elspeth ahead of her, already across the river, and headed with utter, single-minded concentration in the direction of, there was only one place she could be heading for, the grove. Talia forced her pace to the fastest she could manage, leaning at an acute angle into the wind, but the girl had a considerable head start on her, and had already entered the grove by the time she had crossed the bridge. The pale blob was lost to sight as the foliage closed around it, and Talia stumbled over the uneven ground, falling more than once and bruising hands and knees on the stones hidden in the grass. The long grass itself whipped at her booted legs, tangling her feet with each step. She was halfway to the grove when she looked up from yet another fall to see that it was gods, glowing faintly from within. She shook her head, blinking, certain that her eyes were playing tricks on her. The glow remained, scarcely brighter than foxfire, but unmistakably there. She started to rise, when the entire world seemed to give a gut-wrenching lurch, disorienting her completely. She clutched at the grass beneath her hands,
as the only reality in a suddenly unreal world, the pain of her bruised palms hardly registering. Everything seemed to be spinning, the way it had the one time she'd fainted, and she was lost in the darkness, with the wind wailing in a whirlwind around her and the grove. There was a sickening moment, or eternity, when nothing was real. Then the world settled, and normality returned with an almost audible snap. The wind died away to nothing. Sound returned. The disorientation vanished, all in the space of a single heartbeat. Talia opened her eyes, unaware until that moment that she'd been clenching both eyes and jaw so tightly her face ached. Less than 5 feet away stood Elspeth, between the supporting shoulders of two companions. The one on her left was Roland, and he was back in Talia's awareness again. Tired, though. Very tired, but strangely contented. Talia staggered to her feet. The gray light of the setting moon was lightening the sky, and by it, she could make out the girl's features. Elspeth seemed dazed, and if the contrast between the dark mass of her hair and the paleness of her skin meant anything, she was drained as white as paper. Talia stumbled the few steps between them, grabbed her shoulders and shook her. Until that moment, the girl didn't seem to realize she was there.
"Elspeth!"
was all she managed to choke out around her own nerveless shivering.
"Talia?"
The girl blinked once, then dumbfounded her mentor by seeming to snap into total wakefulness, smiling and throwing her arms around Talia's shoulders.
"Talia, I..."
She laughed, almost hysterical with joy, and for one brief moment, Talia feared she'd lost her mind. Then she let go of the herald and threw both of her arms around the neck of the companion to her right.
"Talia! Talia, it happened! Gwenna chose me! She called me when I was asleep, and I came, and she chose me!"
"Gwenna?" Talia knew every companion in residence, having spent nearly as much time with them as Karen, and having helped to midwife many of the foals. That name didn't belong to any of them. And that could only mean one thing. Gwenna, like Roland, and unlike any other companion currently alive, was Grove-born. But why? For centuries, only Monarch's own companions had appeared in the Grove like companions of old. Talia started to say something, and abruptly felt Roland's presence overwhelming her mind, tinged with a feeling of gentle regret. Talia shook her head, bewildered by the sensation that she'd forgotten something, then dismissed the feeling. Elspeth had been chosen. That was what mattered. She remembered the mare vaguely now. Gwenna had always been one of the Shire companions, staying well away from visitors. All her shyness seemed gone as she nuzzled Elspeth's hair with possessive pride. Roland, who had been supporting Elspeth on the left, now paced forward in time to give Talia a shoulder to lean on, for her own knees were going weak with reaction, and she felt as drained as if she'd had a 3-candle mark workout with Albrecht. Birds were breaking into morning song all around them, and the first light of true dawn streaked the sky to the east with festive ribbons of brightness among the clouds.
"Oh, Catling!"
Talia released her hold on Roland's mane, and flung both her arms around Elspeth, nearly in tears with joy. It did not occur to either of them to wonder why no one else had been mustered out of bed by that imperative calling both of them had answered, and why no one else had noticed anything at all out of the ordinary even yet. Talia managed to convince Elspeth not to go back to her bed, because that was an impossibility, but to settle with Gwenna in a sheltered little hollow, with a blanket purloined from the stable around her shoulders. Talia hoped that when her excitement faded, the child would doze off again. The gods knew she'd be safe enough in the field with her own companion standing protective guard over her. She wished devoutly that she could have done the same, but there were far too many things she had to attend to. The first and most important was to inform the queen. Even at this early hour, Selene would be awake and working, and likely with one or more counselors. That meant a formal announcement, and not what Talia really wanted to do, which was to burst into Selene's chamber, caroling for joy. However pleased Selene would be, that sort of action would only give the counselors a very poor impression of the Queen's own maturity. So Talia stumbled back to her room again, through the sweet breeze of a perfect dawn, through bird choruses that were only a faint, far echo of the joy in her heart, to get redressed. And this time, as neatly and precisely as she could manage, cringing inwardly at the grass stains left on the knees of the pair of breeches she'd just peeled off. Then she walked, decorously and soberly, down through the silence of the Herald's Wing to the new palace wing that held the suites of Queen and Court. As usual, there were two blue-clad guardsmen stationed outside the doors to the royal chambers. She nodded to them. Dark John to the right, wizened Fess to the left. She knew both of them well, and longed to be able to whisper her news, but that wouldn't do. It wouldn't be dignified, and it would absolutely shatter protocol. As Queen's own, she had the right of entry to the Queen's chambers at any time of night or day, and was quickly admitted beyond those heavy, golden oak doors. As she had expected, Selene was already hard at work in her dark-paneled outer chamber, dressed for the day in formal whites, massive desk covered with papers, and both Lord Ortholan and the Seneschal at her shoulders. She looked up at Talia's entrance, startled, blue eyes seeming weary even this early in the day. Whatever brought those two counselors to her side, it did not look to be pleasant. Perhaps Talia's news would change all that. She clued Selene to the gravity of her news by making the formal half-bow before entering, and that it was good news by a cheerful wink so timed that only Selene noted it. Protocol demanded exactly 5 steps across that dark blue carpet, which took her to exactly within comfortable conversational distance of the desk. Then she went to one knee, trying not to flinch as her bruises encountered the floor. Selene, tucking a strand of gold hair behind one ear and straightening in expectation, nodded to indicate she could speak.
"Majesty, I have come to petition the right of a trainee to enter the Collegium,"
Talia said gravely, with both hands clasped upon the upright knee, while her eyes danced at the nonsense of all this formality. That got the attention not only of Selene but of both counselors. Only high-born trainees needed to have petitions laid before the crown, for becoming a herald often meant renouncing titles and lands, either actual or presumptive. Talia could see the puzzlement in the counselor's eyes, and the rising hope in Selene's.
"What companion has chosen, and what is the candidate's name and rank?"
Selene replied just as formally, one hand clutching the goblet before her so tightly her knuckles went white.
"The companion Gwenna has chosen,"
Talia barely managed to keep from singing the words,
"and her choice is the heir presumptive, now heir in right, the Lady Elspeth. May I have the Queen's leave to enter the trainee in the Collegium rules?"
Within the hour, Court and Collegium were buzzing, and Talia was up to her eyebrows in all the tasks needed to transfer Elspeth from her mother's custody to that of the Collegium. Elspeth spent the day in blissful ignorance of all the fuss, which was only fair. The first few hours were critical in the formation of the herald-companion bond, and should be spent in as undisturbed a manner as possible. So it was Talia's task to see to it that when Elspeth finally drifted dreamily back through the gates of Companion's Field, everything, from room assignment to having her belongings transferred, had been taken care of for her. And toward day's end, it occurred to Talia that it behooved her to take dinner with the court rather than the Collegium. The Queen might make dinner the occasion for the formal announcement of choice of heir. She finished setting up Elspeth's class schedule with Dean Elkarth and sprinted to her quarters and up the stairs as fast as her sore knees would permit. After a quick wash, she rummaged in the wooden wardrobe, cursing as she bumped her head against one of the doors. After making what she hoped was an appropriate selection, she dressed hastily in one of the velvet outfits. With one hand brushing her hair, half skipping as she wedged her feet into the soft slippers that went with it, she used the other hand to snatch the appropriate book of protocol from among the others on her still dusty desk. While wriggling to settle the clothing properly and using both hands to smooth her hair, she reviewed the brief ceremony attendant on the coronation of the heir. She shot a quick look at herself in the mirror, then took herself off to the great hall. She slipped into her seldom-used seat between Elspeth and the Queen and whispered,
"Well, she's going to do it as soon as everyone arrives," Elspeth breathed back. "I think I'm going to die."
"No, you won't," Talia answered in a conspiratorial manner. "You've been doing things like this for ages. Now I may die."
Elspeth was relaxing visibly now that Talia was there to share her ordeal. Talia had only taken meals with the court a handful of times since she'd arrived at the Collegium, and the great hall never ceased to impress her. It was the largest single room in the palace. Its high vaulted ceiling, supported by slender-seeming pillars of iron oak that gleamed golden in the light from the windows and the lamp and candlelight. There were battle banners and heraldic pennons that went clear back to the founding hanging from the rafters. Talia's seat was at the table placed on the dais, which stood at a right angle to the rest of the tables in the hall. Late sunlight streamed in through the tall, narrow windows that filled the west wall, but the windows to the east were already beginning to darken with the onset of nightfall. The courtiers seated along the tables below her were as colorful as a bed of wildflowers, and formed a pleasing grouping against the panels and tables of golden iron oak. When the great hall was filled, the Queen arose as the stewards called for silence. It would have been possible to hear a feather fall as she began. Every eye in the hall was riveted on her proud, white-clad figure, with the thin circlet of royal red gold. It was all she would wear as a token of her rank, encircling her ravel-leaf golden hair.
"Since the death of my father, we have been without an heir. I can understand and sympathize with those of you who found this a disquieting and frightening situation. You may rejoice, for all uncertainty is at an end. This day was my daughter Elspeth chosen by the companion Gwenna, making her a fully eligible candidate for the position of heir. Rise, daughter."
Elspeth and Talia both rose. Elspeth to stand before her mother, Talia to take the silver coronet of the heir from the steward holding it. She presented it to the Queen, then retired to her proper position as Queen's own, behind and slightly to Selene's right. She was pleased to note that, although Elspeth's hands trembled, her voice, as she repeated her vows, was strong and clear. Elspeth caught her eyes and held to Talia's gaze as if to a lifeline. Elspeth was frightened half to death, despite her lifelong preparation for this moment. She could clearly see Talia's encouraging expression, and the presence of the Queen's own gave her comfort and courage. For one panicked moment, halfway through her vows, she forgot what her mother had said just the instant before. She felt a flood of gratitude when she noticed Talia's lips moving and realized that she was mouthing the words Elspeth had just forgotten. There was more to it than just having a friend at hand, too. With her mental senses sharpened and enhanced by having been chosen, Elspeth could dimly feel Talia as a solid, comforting presence, like a deeply rooted tree in a wild windstorm. There would always be shelter for her beneath those branches. And as she repeated the last words of her oath, she suddenly realized how vital that shelter would be to one who, as ruler, must inevitably face the gales, and more often than not, alone. There was also, distinctly though distantly, the sense that Talia loved her for herself, and as a true friend. And that in itself was a comfort. As she finished the last words, and her mother placed the silver circlet on her head, she tried to put all her gratitude to her friend in the smile she gave her. As the Queen placed the coronet on her daughter's hair, a spontaneous cheer rose that gladdened Talia's heart. Perhaps now the brat could be forgotten. But as they resumed their seats and the serving began, the unaccustomed dainties of the Queen's table suddenly lost their appeal as Talia realized that there was yet another ceremony to be endured, one about which she knew nothing. As soon as the powers of the kingdom could be gathered,
there must be a great ceremony of fealty in which the Queen's own would play a significant role. Talia reached blindly for her goblet to moisten a mouth gone dry with panic. Then she took herself firmly in hand. Kirill and Elkarth, as Seneschal's herald and dean of the Collegium, would surely know everything about this occasion, and just as surely would be aware that Talia didn't. There was no need to panic. Not yet, anyway. The meal seemed to be progressing with ponderous slowness. This was Talia's first high feast, and it seemed incredibly dull. She sighed, and the queen caught the sound. "Bored," she whispered out of the corner of her mouth. "Oh, no," Talia replied with a forced smile. "Liar," the queen replied with a twinkle. "No one but a moron could avoid being bored by all this. You sit and smile till your face and backside are both stiff. Then you sit and smile some more." "How do you manage this day after day?" Talia asked, trying not to laugh. "Father taught me a game. Elspeth and I play it now." "What are we doing this time, Catling?"
"We're back to animals,"
Elspeth replied, as her mother nodded to an elderly duke in response to some comment he'd mumbled.
"You try and decide what animal the courtiers most remind you of. We change each time. Sometimes it's flowers, trees, rocks, landmarks, even weather. This time it's animals, and he's a badger."
"Well, if he's a badger, his lady's a watchdog. Look how she raises her hackles whenever he smiles at that pretty servant girl," Talia said.
"Oh, I'd never have thought of that one," Elspeth exclaimed. "You're going to be good at this game."
They managed to keep straight faces, but it wasn't easy. Talia sought out Kirill the next day before the thrice-weekly council meeting to learn that she had 3 weeks in which to prepare for Elspeth's formal investiture. He and Elkarth pledged to drill her in all she needed to know, from protocol to politics, every day. The council meeting in itself was something of an ordeal. She and Elspeth had seats on the far end of the horseshoe-shaped council table, almost opposite Selene and the empty place beside her. That empty chair was the seat of the Queen's own, but Talia could not under law assume that place until she had passed her own internship. She and Elspeth had voice on the council, but no vote. Elspeth's own voting rights were in abeyance until she passed internship. The councillors tended to ignore them because of that lack of voting rights, but not today. No, today they interrogated both Talia and Elspeth with an ill-concealed eagerness that bordered on greed. How soon did Talia think she'd be out in the field? Could the internship be cut back to a year, or, given the importance of her position and her lack of experience, should it be extended past the normal year and a half? Could Elspeth's education be rushed? What should she be tutored in besides the normal curriculum of the Herald's Collegium? Did she feel ready for her new position as heir? And on and on. From most of the counselors, Talia only received a well-intentioned, if irritating, eagerness to help the children, and she cursed, not for the first time, her slight stature that made her seem barely an adolescent, but from others. Lord Orthalin, one of Selene's closest advisers, as he had been to her father, regarded both of them with a cool, almost cold gaze. And Talia felt very like a prime specimen of some unusual beetle on the dissecting table. She got no emotional impressions from him at all. She never had. That was profoundly disturbing, for one whose gift was empathy, and even more disturbing was the vague feeling that he was not pleased that Elspeth had at last been chosen. From Bard Hyren, speaker for the Bardic Circle, she got a distinct feeling that all this was happening far too quickly, and that not enough caution was being exercised, and that he didn't quite trust her. Lord Garthesar's feelings were of general displeasure over the whole affair, but she couldn't pinpoint why. There was also a faint overtone of disappointment. He was related to Kemoc, one of the three other contenders for the position. Could that be all, though? Or was there something deeper in his motivation? Lady Wyrist was downright annoyed, but why, Talia couldn't fathom. It might have been simply that she was afraid that Talia would favor her own relations, the Holderkin, who lived in the area Wyrist spoke for. She could hardly know there was small chance of that. Ortholan was the one who bothered her most. But as the meeting broke up, she knew she would mention this to no one. She had nothing of fact to report, and she and Ortholan had bad blood between them over his treatment and near expulsion of her friend Skiff from the Collegium. She knew better than to give Ortholan so powerful a weapon